Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios.
All right, welcome back. And here we are with another episode of the Rhode Island Liberty Report. I'm Mike, and with me tonight are our co-hosts, Bill and Sean. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great, Mike. Yeah.
Awesome.
Here we are again. Keeping awesome. The schedule.
Yeah, it's exciting. We got that one podcast under our belt, and you know, we're on number two. We're on a roll officially, I guess. Yeah, everything's been going well. You guys been doing fine. Everything good at work and all that good stuff, I hope.
Yep. The COVID lifestyle dregs on. Is that not right? At least we have spring and summer to look forward to, at least.
Right. Just a little bit of housekeeping. Something I wanted to mention from the rollout of our last episode, there was some little bit of hiccups with our podcast propagating to all the podcatchers out there, iTunes and whatnot. And I think that was just because there was such a big break between the last episode from the last time and this one. Although it seems to be syncing up now pretty good, and I'll keep an eye on that so we can make sure that gets out there to everybody. So hopefully everybody has been able to get it that wants to get it. And I know a couple of people had reached out and said, oh, cool, it's back. I had a friend of mine send me a text that says, oh, I just saw that the report's back in my feed. So that was kind of cool. I thought that was pretty good. And good reception so far. So
yeah,
so that's exciting.
Yeah, I'll do a quick plug. Really appreciate the folks that you know, checked out the podcast. Also, the folks that and Michael lead up to it, but join the conversation after the podcast. We've got our form up at libertyri.net, and we were able to continue the conversation there and on our Facebook page as well. So it was really good connecting and continuing the conversation there.
Yep, it's awesome. That's what it's all about, right? It's all about a conversation. that's what's important. Speaking of reaching out to people, my attempt at a segue there.
Master at segues.
Something I've been wanting to talk about for a while, and something that we've been kind of doing behind the scenes and working at is under the umbrella of professionalizing the liberty movement and the libertarian movement in particular, because, you know, liberty movement sometimes gets lumped in with some others, but specifically the libertarian movement within Rhode Island specifically. Of course, there's a lot to be done nationwide, but obviously we focus here specifically. And there's a big thing we get pushback on is all of us are involved in the LPRI, right? The Libertarian Party of Rhode Island. It's the political arm of the, you know, liberty movement here, if you will, involved in electoral politics. And that's the mission, so to speak, of that. And oftentimes people, I think it's partly because of the word, right? So libertarian is not only a political party, it's also a philosophy or a movement in that sense. So oftentimes people will conflate the two. They just assume that the Libertarian Party also does all the not only does the political, work of getting people elected and running candidates and whatnot, it also serves a purpose of advocacy work or, you know, organizing rallies and setting up, sub organizations that do, you know, item specific advocacy type work, whether it's testifying or doing other types of outreach in that aspect. And we've talked about this over the past few years, and that's not really a way a political party in general is designed, whether Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian. I mean, if you look at, like, say, the Democratic Party's website, you go there and it's all about getting people elected, right? It's all about political operations, volunteering on political campaigns, running for office as a Democrat. Very little to do about activism type work, if that makes sense. So something that we saw, go ahead.
A lot of what they're doing, Mike, is they're setting up the town committees and the local committees that are getting the lower people elected, the town council people, the school committee people, all the way up to your state representatives, your state senators, and then higher office as you move up the chain of the political party itself. So that they, the nature of them having these sub town committees actually aids in their ability to get those people elected and to raise money for the party itself. So being a small political party like the Libertarian Party is, we don't have the ability or the membership to start dividing up into those smaller segments of the population by city or town. We need to get the numbers and concentrate them on a statewide election. Primarily the governor's race is really the most one that's most important to us.
Yep. No, and I agree with you on that. Yeah, that's right. And also, I want to preface this if I haven't already. I'll reiterate it if I did, is that we're not speaking on, even though we are involved with the Libertarian Party, we're not speaking on behalf of the Libertarian Party. That's very clear. Just kind of giving people a general overview of how the system works and the, you know, the infrastructure as it is right now. So, and to your point, Bill, like with the LPRI or the Libertarian movement or the LPRI in specific being so relatively small compared to the other for the Democrats, certainly. And obviously the Republicans have been around for long enough where they've built something. Effectiveness in Rhode Island obviously can be discussed.
Well, the Republicans also benefit from every 4 years getting a big influx of cash, and they have an actual candidate that they can go out and support in the whoever the presidential nominee is. There's also in non-presidential years, they do run a governor each and every time who, while they may not have any real chance of winning in the most recent elections, they still get a substantial percentage of the vote, which qualifies them to continue their status in Rhode Island as a political party, which is really all they need.
Right. And that all ties back to ballot access, right? And actual political party status, right? So the LPRI is organized as a PAC within the state because they haven't achieved political or ballot access or major political party status here. Again, that's probably a discussion for another episode, maybe sometime. But that just having that status affords a huge advantage to the Republicans and the Democrats because people can register as a Republican and Democrat. So if you are running as a either of the two, you pull the voter file and you can automatically see within your district or whatever race you're running, who your constituency is, at least. Whereas a Libertarian doesn't have that advantage, right?
And beyond that, you look at a party like what happened to the moderate party when Bob Healey was appointed as the governor. Because they were an established political party in the state of Rhode Island, they could follow the rules and reappoint someone. If nobody declares to run for a specific seat in the state or representative of the state senate, the chair, Sue Sankey or Joe McNamara, can go ahead and appoint someone to run in that seat. Those are all things that we can't do as a Libertarian Party. We have to function separately as a political action committee until we get that status.
So are you guys telling me that the state is on purpose inserting artificial barriers of entry to give the population more than one choice or two choices?
There's a theme going on here, Sean.
Right.
Yikes.
And I didn't even want to go down this route, but yeah, like Rhode Island's got some of the toughest ballot access restrictions in the country, right? We have only two options to get status, and one is either run a presidential candidate that gets above 5% or a governor's candidate that gets above 5%. And most states, it's, you know, very often it's 3%. And I think it's like any statewide election. So it could be, you know, a treasurer or Secretary of State or any of those elections. And, you know, yeah. So Rhode Island definitely puts up the barriers to entry for that.
And that's what makes the movement even more important in Rhode Island, right? Because they have that strong Democratic machine and the Republicans are able to keep in, but being able to advance the movement in Rhode Island is a lot trickier. And it's not just because of those types of things, right? Ballot access is definitely a huge obstacle, for the Libertarian Party and the movement in general, but it really tries to put people into these different boxes. And Rhode Island seems very, very comfortable to stay in a lot of those boxes, even though everyone's complaining about a wide range of problems. we typically keep doing the same thing. I want to say that, you know, if we expect different results, keep electing the same types of folks, and it sounds like insanity. I don't know. It could be wrong.
Well, this all ties back to Mike's original point about how we need to focus as a party on, you know, getting people elected and getting campaigns established where we can run candidates effectively so we can get that ballot access, which would make it afford us, you know, other benefits that would make it easier going forward. But until we reach that pinnacle and we get over that hurdle, it's really, you know, doing a bunch of rallies or, you know, events or activism that is just going to be, you know, pissing in the wind. You're not going to be getting a lot of response for what you put out there. You may be put in the paper, you may have a comment or make some sense to people, but are you really advancing the movement of liberty in the state of Rhode Island?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm pushing back on that a little bit or if I'm just coming at it from a different angle. I think the thought being, as I kind of started to say earlier on, was that the LPRI is designed, quote unquote, designed to run political operations, right? Like to run political electoral, activity, right? So that's what people getting involved in the LPRI, and you should, but with a focus on what can I bring to that table, right? How can I either one be a person to run for office? And again, that's not for everybody. We know that I'm personally not somebody who would feel comfortable doing that. Bill obviously has done it several times, is comfortable doing that, but I'm very comfortable behind the scenes and helping out and doing, you know, work behind the scenes. That's just as important, if not more important, than the actual candidate themselves running, right? Because there's a lot of work to be done behind the scenes. So we need those people as well. And of course, then there's money, right? Like you need money to run political campaigns in the state. And the good thing is most libertarians are very frugal and run very efficient and effective campaigns with little to no money, but it's still necessary, right? The more money you get, the better things you can do. You can reach out in different ways. And, you know, again, probably a discussion from another for another podcast, but there's also the activism side of it. And I think that's also important, right? Because some people maybe not interested in politics, but they're libertarians at heart philosophically. And their issue is legalization, or their issue is the lockdowns or business regulation, whatever, you know, veterans issues or, you know, and those people need have an outlet as well. And that's why I'll announce it here. We started the Rhode Island Liberty Alliance to provide, and I'll call it an umbrella, if you guys will agree with me, that will provide support for those people to help get their issues-based activism or groups off the ground. And we can provide infrastructure for them. We can help them with websites. We can help them with, you know, email or donation plugins and how to raise money and all this other stuff. And not only that, but policy analysis and kind of feed that to them as well. Take in, you know, bills that are coming down the pipe and kind of do some analysis for them and give that to them and their issues and start having an umbrella and an infrastructure, I guess is the best word, for them to start their issues based campaigns. And then they can just concentrate on their issues and either testifying or setting up rallies or finding people, right? Getting people to join, which is the most important thing.
And that's a big barrier to entry in terms of someone who's running for office and not having a well-established brand of libertarian to the average voter. And you go around knocking on doors and then they hear something about, let's say, you know, legalization of marijuana or some like gun rights issue or something that's a very polarizing issue that is an issue for the entire party. Not to say that those aren't values that we support as libertarians, but, you know, by constantly attaching us to those specific issues may hurt our candidates when they're going and knocking the doors. And not to say that candidates should be backing away and not explaining their situation, but if the only information people have of that candidate is some extreme or something that they feel in their mind is an extreme political stance, that does nothing but really hurt the candidate going forward instead of building the brand of a libertarian as a political party, just as the Republicans and the Democrats are.
Yeah, and you know, I think Rhode Island is actually a really interesting environment and opportunity for something like that, right? We don't have, we've got a very small state. There are counties in Texas that outpopulate the whole state, right? And there's a lot of opportunity in Rhode Island to make change, especially at the grassroots level, whether if it's, town level, city level positions, to where you could actually impact lives, both as a political candidate, but also in the community. And I think that's another important aspect of, what the Liberty Movement brings, is being able to connect with the community and being able to influence those types of change. Because at the end of the day, we're people, right? And I think that's where you inspire that type of change from, is, from a community, a volunteer basis to advance things in our lives. And those are the things at the lower level that are going to affect people's lives in their day-to-day operations, more so than us being able to, put all these resources into doing these certain other things that may come, may not happen, right? And that's because there are a lot of barriers against, that type of movement today in Rhode Island. But I think it's a very unique opportunity for folks to get involved and make a real difference in their communities.
Yep. A couple of other things I want, and I'll close on this, these last couple of points. One, going back to what Billy was saying about partnering, potentially partnering. This provides a great opportunity for a Libertarian candidate who's being supported by the Libertarian Party to run their campaign and then find Libertarian groups that they can link to for the issues that they're running their campaign on, right? So there's no fear of linking to a cannabis group that's, pro, tax and regulate. Like you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot by doing that. But here you might have a cannabis group, a pro-legalization group that's very Libertarian, right? Like we talked about last week. And yep. he or she has no issue linking the two together, and they can work together and do outreach work together, right? So that's what happens on political campaigns. And then you can, recruit volunteers. It's a very symbiotic relationship, but yet the LPRI is left to focus on those electoral operations, and the other groups are focusing on their issues. And one other important thing is, if everything fell under one umbrella, say the LPRI, it's a very small footprint, right? You look a lot smaller than you really are, right? You're not spreading your footprint. Where if you have many organizations within the state that are running on liberty issues, or promoting liberty issues, you increase your footprint and therefore increase your potential to bring people into the movement as well. So it's that much better. We do get some pushback on.
It's also a free market approach to the idea too, Mike, if you think about it, because people can create these groups independent of the party themselves, and the people who are running for office or people within the party can choose voluntarily whether or not to interact or to take the support from those organizations themselves too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you get the most bang for your buck with something like that too, especially when we want to concentrate on very, very key issues, whether it's Second Amendment gun rights, whether it's cannabis legalization or anything else that Rhode Islanders might be concerned with as a community. Yeah, we'll get a lot better, I think, output overall if we're able to consolidate, those very specific focus areas and being able to execute, different intentions there versus, like Mike said, right, the wide range of what the Libertarian issues would be, or platforms where you could, connect with very dedicated people that are able to reinforce those types of principles, right?
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep, exactly. And I guess last thing here, talking about professionalizing this, right, attracting the right people, the people that are going to actually get involved and dedicate their time and resources to it. Sometimes Libertarians push back on that, right? The whole professionalizing of this, right? I know just recently, in the past month or two, the Mises Caucus which is a subgroup within the Libertarian Party, they've established a PAC where they raise money that supports candidates around the country. And they're just got to the point where they raised enough money to bring on the one person as a full-time paid executive director. I don't know what the position's title is, but to run that organization. And they got a bunch of pushback from Libertarians on that, saying, oh, they're just getting money. It's just, if you've got somebody that's being paid doing this full time There's nothing wrong with that. They're just growing the organization. Like the three of us here know what a suck on time it is for our personal lives to try to do this outside of work and, you know, kids and family and, you know, trying to have some balance of, you know, sanity and personal fun in your life. It's a huge suck. So don't give pushback to the people on that from that perspective. And then the last part of that is libertarians, again, inherently are individualists and they're not into doing group things, right? Like we're all about that kind of thing, right? The anti-collectivist approach. The problem is you need to work as a group and an organization to have some kind of impact, right? And if you are one of those people, my challenge to you is to get involved. One, either with your time, if you can volunteer on a campaign or volunteer on an advocacy group, start one. Money is always, it's a hard ask, but it's something that's needed, right? Like, and again, if you're going to give your money, libertarians, in my past experience, are very good with their money, right? They spend it very, very wisely. So I guess that's my final thoughts on that. If you guys want anything to add before we jump.
So Mike, if anybody was interested in starting a liberty leaning organization, where would you send them to get that information?
So we have we've set up a landing site right now. We're still building the website out, but it's Rhode Island Liberty or RILibertyAlliance.com. So RILibertyAlliance.com. There's a form right on the front page there to sign up for the newsletter and get in contact with us. Search for it. I'll put the links in the show notes, but we've also set up a Facebook page that's got zero people there so far, I think, because we've not announced this yet. But and then we also have a Twitter. So I'll put those links in the show notes for sure. But yeah, and we're going to talk about this ongoing. And so this is kind of an early announcement, but we want people to know that it's being done. And we're looking at trying to grow this in Rhode Island because we need it. We have nothing, right? It's an uphill battle for sure, but we need people to help us fight. So,
and you know, this is a great way to connect with other people. You know, I just want to bring that up. The once you find one libertarian and you can have a conversation with them, be like, oh, I agree with that. I do think we should legalize cannabis, or you know, guns are really important to me. Being able to connect with people like that, I think that is very, very important. And being able to leverage an infrastructure to promote change like that, I think that's going to be a great tool for the liberty movement in Rhode Island, Mike.
Yep. So, you know, we're rolling this out and yeah. So hopefully everybody will get the word. And speaking of rollouts, the vaccine rollout. So how's that going, Bill?
Great. I'm the master of segues. This is perfect, but no, exactly. It's the state government, to start off, I want to say that I'm not anti-vaccine. I think with everything that happened last week with Joe Rogan and Dave Smith, you got to be careful that I'm not a scientist. I'm not, giving anybody any type of medical advice whatsoever. And quite frankly, I really don't want to talk about the COVID-19 vaccine that much just because it's been talked about and beaten to death. But I want to talk about it indirectly in relation to the flu vaccine here in Rhode Island. Now, I don't know if either of you know this, but in 2018, the CDC recognized the state of Rhode Island as having the best flu vaccination rate in the country. We were better than any metropolitan area. We had whatever the state was doing, whatever the Department of Health was doing back in 2018 before this pandemic, we had some of the highest rates of flu vaccination in the country. Now, that could that be because of our elderly population? Whatever. But that being said, in 2020, when everybody was worried about the COVID-19 respiratory illness, and the doctors recommended that you get the flu shot because the worst thing that could possibly happen, apparently, was if you got COVID and the flu at the same time, there was a rush on getting flu shots in the state of Rhode Island. Now, just a personal note, at the same time, me and my wife were expecting our first child, and I was prescribed by my doctor to go to get my flu shot and my Tdap shot, whooping cough and tetanus combination shot, in order to prepare for the baby. These are things that they recommend. I remember when my niece was born a few years ago, before the vaccination has since run out. The effectiveness has run out. I had to get it in order to be around her for a while. So again, I'm not anti-vaccine. I took my flu shot this first time in a long time this year. But when I arrived at CVS to get my flu and my Tdap shot, the nurse that was administering the shot told me that I would be able to get the Tdap, but they couldn't do the flu shot because the state supplied vaccine was unavailable at the time. And that was the only one that was covered by my Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance. Now, I'm an individual health plan. I work for myself and I pay for my own health insurance. So I definitely don't have a great plan, but it's not like the worst plan in the world either. There's really not that many variations in health insurance. But it kind of struck me as odd. And I said, well, there's really nothing we can do. And she's like, well, you have to pay $40 to get a non-state supplied vaccine for your insurance. So I go, okay, well, I think it's worth the $40. So I shelled out the money and kind of, you know, grit my teeth and got stuck in my arm and, you know, didn't really think about it for a long time. But since this whole COVID vaccine has come running down the pike and people have been talking about the effectiveness and how people are uneasy about getting the COVID vaccine and, you know, the vaccination rate in the state of Rhode Island is low as it is across the country. And it made me wonder how in 2018, we went from having one of the highest vaccination rates in the country to now struggling with the issue. And so that state supplied vaccine stuck in my mind. So I went and did some research and found out that the state supplied vaccine is part of the federal Vaccines for Children program. Now, uninsured children who need to get their early shots that, you know, you just have a baby and they need to get stuff to protect it from polio and all that other stuff. That seems like a pretty innocuous thing for the federal government to pay for. I mean, Mike, would you be against that as a hardcore libertarian or a compassionate father? Or
it wouldn't be the first thing on my list, put it that way, right?
Okay.
Let's take care of some other things first and then we'll get there.
Right. If I told you, Sean, if we could protect the children and protect the community as a whole as well by, you know, just putting a little bit of federal funds towards vaccinating children, would you go for that funds, the federal 317 funds? Would you go for that type of plan?
Well, I see what the government does with a lot of the funds, but I'm going to copy Mike. We got bigger fish to fry, I think.
Well, you're obviously not our elected officials who would just bend over backwards to just get up and do that type of virtue signaling for sure. But nevertheless, this is the program that's out there that's running. Now, this program was never intended to pick up the cost or to vaccine people with insurance or Medicare or Medicaid for that matter. They were specifically excluded from these federal 317 funds. And except there is an exception to that rule. If number one, the individual seeking that vaccine during a public health response activity, such as an outbreak response, or number two, for a mass vaccination campaign or exercise for public health preparedness. So in this particular caveat, because of the pandemic, you're now allowed to take those vaccines and give it to everyone. So the thing that just struck me and the reason why I wanted to bring this all up and talk about this is the sheer ridiculousness of having the government interact with the market for the vaccines, where they've interjected themselves and they've carved out something because it's a pandemic. Of course, more people need to get vaccines, right? But that relies on the state choosing the correct number of vaccines that they needed to get. Now, there's half historical data going back to the beginning of this, when they knew who was regularly uninsured getting those vaccines. But now all of a sudden in a public health crisis, especially because it happened, you know, after the year started and everything like that, you know, you're trying to allocate these funds and there's not enough state supply. Meanwhile, the big, you know, health insurers, Medicare, Medicaid are just charging all of this back to the state because they have all that federal stimmy money in there that they're going and pumping out. And meanwhile, you have the, you know, the government either taking out the money in their left pocket and putting it in their right pocket, or just be giving a huge federal stimulus handout to these large insurers and everything like that. And it's just really, you know, a grotesque thing that I've seen, not just in this type of thing, but in everything that goes on with these federal stimulus money. And I just found it interesting. So I wanted to kind of bring it up to see what you guys thought about that.
That's bizarre. Like, I never even knew that was a thing. But yeah. And maybe you can answer this, Bill. I'm not sure if you found it in your research. So in just a normal year, 2018, right? Would Blue Cross and Blue Shield, would they have covered non-state vaccines? So just regular vaccines off the shelf.
They would have charged for it in regular season, especially if you have a prescription from your doctor. That's the whole means of the thing. What's happening with this exception is that if you do have insurance, the shot itself is free and they bill for the administration of the shot. So the health insurance is still paying a portion of it, but they're able to take 50% of their costs or whatever the percentage of their cost is and charge it to the state to get reimbursed through the federal program. So now you've restricted the state supply and you've created a two-tier health system where people like me who have the disposable cash can go and move up and buy the vaccine for the extra $40. But the low-income people with no insurance, who was designed to protect in the first place, have no recourse, and they can't get the shot
because there's the supply issue, right? Like this goes to, I think it's called a calculation problem, right? With communists, right? Back in the day, you know, Russia used to spy on other countries to figure out how many tires they were producing because their tire factory just keeps cranking out tires because there's no market in place to send signals that say we need more tires, we need less tires, like that kind of thing. So same issue here, and then you're like you're saying of course the insurance company is going to go for the quote unquote free vaccine because why would they want to spend money? They don't have to. And then again, like you said, it causes a shortage. And now it's unbelievable.
I'm sure in the terms and service that you agree with your insurance policy, they're allowed to, because this happens all the time with health insurance. Your doctor prescribes you a certain type of medication. They try to push the generic form on you and you have to take that generic form unless you go back to the doctor and get a specific prescription to say, yes, he actually needs this particular brand of medicine, whatever it might be. So the health insurance has the especially they're taking advantage of the situation, which is what the law is written. It's what they're allowed to do. But they're taking advantage of the situation, being able to charge the cost back to the state. So there's no incentive for them to provide, because then you can just say, well, we are offering the state supply as our flu vaccine for this year. And if you just don't have access to it, that's just not our problem.
You know, that's such an artificial barrier again. Yeah, I feel like I keep saying that word in this episode too many times already, but it's just another example of something that doesn't need to be there. You know, they're trying to manipulate, you know, the conditions that are set there, and they're doing it through all of these different nuances of artificial stimulus or you know, trying to create that type of scarcity when it doesn't exist, right? You know, in this case, you should have had no issue under any circumstance. Now, we'll be a little lenient. They probably didn't think anyone would execute, you know, that exception during a pandemic or global health crisis, right? But, you know, I think, you know, when it comes to that type of stuff, it's another example of, big insurance, you know, kind of taking advantage of situations, but the state is enabling it, right? The state is writing policies that is letting
big insurance, but it's also Medicare and Medicaid too. If you mm-hmm. think about it, all of these organizations are being able to charge it back. They're able to free up money in their budget by charging it to a different budget line item. Mm-hmm. So if they're going ahead and you have these people who, let's say they're elderly people or they're, you know, uninsured people that could normally have access to this, or how about the fact that if their insurance would have normally covered a regular flu shot for them, they're sitting there and going without while flu shots sit on the shelf that nobody's getting administered because there's that financial barrier of having to plunk down $40. Like, that's just insanity to me, that you have vaccines sitting on the shelf waiting to be used that isn't being used while they're waiting for more state supply to come in. It's just unbelievable.
And the whole policy is actually causing harm to people, right? It's affecting the most vulnerable, you know, in our population, the people that if they did get sick are going to have struggle, you know, they're going to have all the struggles that they have to deal with, you know, so it's just... Again.
Well, yeah. And then you see the stories about the low income communities having the lowest vaccination rates in the state. And why is that? And I mean, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy we have here, is that we create the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We create these programs with the idea that we're going to provide resources for certain people when they're in need. But all it does is, especially at the worst possible time during a public health pandemic where we need to get this medicine out to as many people as possible, it's creating an artificial restriction in the allocation of that medication. And it just shows why the government shouldn't be involved in any of this. We should be able to go and deal directly with our private doctors or the private institutions that we're choosing to do business with.
So we know that these free vaccines aren't really free, right? Because they're getting paid for somewhere, right?
Somebody's
like the buses, right? The bus fare is not going to be free. Someone's going to have to pay for that, right? Right, Sean?
Man, oh, that's a great segue.
This is.
Oh man! All right. So I was reading some articles and saw that there was some legislation coming out to make bus fares free. All right. So I want to poll you guys. How much do you think it costs to hop on the bus in Rhode Island?
Oh, geez, it's been years.
But do you have any type of card in your wallet, like that shows you have a disability, or maybe that you collect food stamps or something like that? Or?
Let's just say you're good to go. You just want to hop on the bus, okay, and you know, go over to the park.
Say $1.50.
I was going to say $2.
Yeah, it's actually, Mikey got it. So for a full fare, it's $2. All right. I want you to keep that in mind, because for 1 hour of unlimited rides through RIPTA, it's $2. You can get a monthly pass for $70. Okay. The issue with this here is now they're introducing legislation to make the RIPTA bus fare free. Now there are a few arguments that, you know, the General Assembly is making to do this type of stuff, right? So, you know, I'll read a couple of these verbatim. You know, public transportation cuts across so many issues. It's a climate and environment issue. It's a neighborhood and quality of life issue. It's an economic issue. When we acknowledge this critical link between public transit, job access, and social equity, the need for this legislation becomes obvious. Good public transit is a cornerstone of both climate readiness and social justice. It goes on, Representative Felix hops in and goes, public transportation is a significant part of the fight for racial and social justice. We know that low income people and people of color use public transportation up to twice as frequently as white Americans. Now, I'll say real quick that, you know, both of you and myself, we haven't, you know, hopped on the bus in a very, very long time, especially RIPTA, right? You know, they go into more detail on this legislation ensures that everyone, regardless of race, ethnicity, or class, has a safe way to get to work or school, has access to critical services like health and food, things like that, all because of the free bus fare. So we're not able to enable these things in Rhode Island right now because, and I don't know, you know, if anyone's been driving around Rhode Island lately, but you can get anywhere in 45 minutes, right? So you can, you know, and you know, I argue that I don't think that's too much of a burden, the current fares. But what I do have the issue with, and it's not the buses right now. We can get into, you know, some of those concepts, but they're labeling this as an easy go do because it's free. And I want to make clear that when the government says something is free, it's not. You know, you as the taxpayer, you pay for that service or benefit, whether you use it or not. You pay for it when you buy something through sales tax. You pay for it through your income, you know, where your employer withholds pay to transfer it to the government automatically, right? You know, they say that being able to take these funds to fund a program like this to reduce the bus fare from $2 to zero to free for anyone, right? They say that this will enable more folks to get to work, to give more opportunities, but it's actually the opposite. You know, the government is in the way here. And here's an example I want to do for this, right? To get to work, you need a reliable means of transportation. So you buy a car to get you there. But for the privilege to drive it, right, you have to pay sales tax when you make that purchase. You have to keep up with the car tax. You know, you have your registration and you have its renewal fees. You have state mandated inspections and more fees associated to that. You have DMV fees if you need to do any sort of administration with owning that vehicle. You also need a driver's license, which depending on who you talk to is racist when folks are voting, right? But it's not a bad policy when you're taking those
such
fees,
a good point.
Right?
That's such a good point.
When you're taking those generated driver's license fees to fund the bus fares, it's okay. So we pick and choose where we want to apply our principles here in Rhode Island. We're not done yet though. All right. So we haven't even tried to drive the car yet, you know, so you need to get gas, right? The gas is taxed by Rhode Island. Your maintenance services are taxed. If you want to get new tires due to wear and tear, you hit one too many potholes, right? You know, the disposal of those tires incur an additional environmental fee, right? And so does the dangerous fossil fuels that are used to create oil. You have to pay a disposal fee for that. And again, I want in this example, I want to make it clear, we're not even driving yet. And you're getting taxed.
Don't forget the new TCI tax.
Jeez. And it just keeps changing. It's dynamic, right? That because they know that this is such a critical piece of people doing anything, whether it's commerce, whether it's visiting family, whether it's getting to work, they use this as a crutch. It feeds so many things. So last week on last week's episode, we talked about the roads. I don't want to rehash all that. I encourage you guys, if you missed last week's episode, to go check it out. But it's important that to note that those roads aren't free either. We pay a lot of money every year for those roads. This issue scales beyond the bus fare. It scales beyond the all the fees you pay for cars and the roads. But this is applicable to every function of government. This costs you $12 billion a year for a state with just over 1 million people. All the things they give you access to are things that they give you for free. So let's center this back on the buses again real quick. The proposed legislation that we're talking about is to enable all these things that they're clearly standing in the way of. It's clear to me, without a doubt, with that, and that's just a small list of things that the government is doing to inhibit you to go and do the things that you would need to do the bus for. We make things more expensive to pay for these types of things. But I argue that if the government got out of the way, if they stopped taxing every little aspect of being able to transport yourself or goods or anything like that, that we would actually enable more people, all the people that are disadvantaged, like the different representatives indicated, right? If they got out of the way, you would see that the poorest amongst us would flourish even more, because that's another barrier that's removed. You'll see car ownership go up, but we don't want to talk about that, right? Because if someone's buying a car, then the other narrative there is, you know, towards climate change. And that's the other argument that this proposed legislation, it's going to solve that because more people are going to hop on the bus, right? You know, I think for any sort of service like this, you know, the state should be at a minimum trying to break even. They're not providing the equitable value going back into this, right? There's not enough evidence to support that enabling or saving someone $2 to go anywhere in Rhode Island or even in Massachusetts, right? Ripta goes to Seekonka, there's nothing supporting that this is going to do what they're labeling this as. I want to hear you guys' thoughts on this.
Yeah, I just wanted to read something real quick, and it's the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto, right? It's the sixth plank. It's the centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. Centralizing transportation, right? Like that's really what.
Yikes.
Although I'm curious, right? So what happens if this goes through and all of a sudden everybody within the state can ride the bus for free and they decide on Tuesday of next week to all jump on the bus? What's going to happen?
Well,
have they calculated that problem?
Well, right? No, hold on a second, Mike, because I know you say you haven't ridden Ripta in a while. I've tried to ride Ripta the last few years before the pandemic. Like a couple of buddies and I were all heading out to go to Black Island, and who wants to go out to Black Island for the day and, you know, worry about driving home after you've been drinking or, you know, paying for parking down. And even if we park down in Point Judith, you're still going to get back to wherever you are in the state and everything like that. And I remember looking up the bus schedule, and let's say the ferry leaves at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just making these times up. The bus is not arriving down there until like 9:15, and the next ferry is not till like 11:30 or something like that. So it was just this weird thing where you can't even get the government entities to sync up their means of transportation so that the bus arrives first, drops off passengers, picks up people off the ferry and heads back, or at least have some type of idea, like, you know, drop it off before the ferry in the morning and pick it up after the ferry in the afternoon. So it's just ridiculous. And the other thing that Sean didn't mention, but it's very relevant, is that RIPTA is funded primarily right now due to the gas tax. And that's one of the problems that they have going back last 20, 30 years is that, you know, we've gotten more and more fuel efficient vehicles. So people are buying less gas. So that means less funds in tax collection going to RIPTA to pay for their operations. So now, in addition to all this other stuff and climate issues and everything, when eventually the whole entire fleet goes electric and then that gas tax isn't going to fund RIPTA, that's going to be a whole major portion of it. So there will be no option left except to then have it be a state funded transportation system, 100% fully subsidized.
You bring up something interesting, Bill, with the more efficient vehicles and using less gas and therefore generating less revenue through taxes from the gas. I have a good friend of mine that was in the military with, retired up in Washington State, are just either passed or it's being through the legislature right now to tax you by miles. So now the government is going to tax you on mileage as opposed to gas, how much gas you put in there. And so how do you track that? Right. So now, and I feel bad even saying this here because someone might get, although they probably already have the idea. It's just waiting to get it out there. But so do they put GPS in your car? Do they do it every time you get an inspection? They look at the mileage that you've put on and then you're whacked with a big bill. Like, how does that work? I don't know. And also just one other thing is, so all these people that are in favor of this tax, all these representatives, and they've got this bully pulpit, and how many of them have stood up and said, hey, I'm going to start a charity to help support disadvantaged people who can't afford bus rides and bus fare, to help support them and do it voluntarily. Like, if it's such an issue, they've got massive, like each district has 10,000 people. How many people voted for them? Like, if they got each person that voted for them to give $5, like how many bus rides could that be? Like, they don't want to do that. They want to force everybody to have to pay, whether you use it or not, whether you want it or not.
Yeah. You know, this is a really slippery slope, right? Because, you know, if I was running a business and I was doing bus fares or things like that, you know, even if the things towards, you know, all the things that are involved in running a route, right? You know, maintenance on your vehicles and things like that, we're going to take away one of those big indicators, right? You know, the RIPTA will not be paid that fare. Instead, you're going to have people hopping on the bus. So what's going to happen now that it's free? Well, then we can expand the program, because we need to, and not only do we need to get from, you know, Providence to here and there, but now we need more routes in place. And we don't have that ceiling anymore, because we don't say, well, we don't actually see anyone going on the bus on this route. But if we're not able to see that type of stuff, they're going to expand it. And if they expand it, they're going to need another revenue source. And if they need another revenue source, you know, eventually it's going to trickle down to taxes, right? It's not free.
And what's going to happen to the market in that case, right? So now you've got the market competing with government, right? Free, right? So you're just going to start right now. I'm sure the routes are covered by other, you know, avenues of transportation, well, either Uber, Lyft, or other bus services.
Johnson & Wales has a bus that goes around Providence. Roger Williams has one that goes around the East Bay. Like, they, you know, private institutions come in and they supplant what's already there and run the routes. If all of a sudden it's free, what's to stop them from saying, we'll just take the RIPTA?
Yeah. And now you're stressing that. And like you're saying, John, Sean, you've got to spread that. You know, now you've got to increase the capacity and all that other stuff. So now more funds and more taxes. And yeah.
Yeah, so we had a couple, you know, free market solutions to this, obviously. So, I mean, take the entire RIPTA budget and then just start handing out Uber gift cards. I think that would be a very good way to apply that money and probably get a much more cost effective and create jobs in the meantime, too, right? You know, actually, like, have a diverse, fun people doing that. Or this is a little bit more of a radical idea. In the urban centers, we can just take some of that money and we can buy ATVs and dirt bikes for all the residents, and they can spin around and they don't have to worry about registering their vehicles or anything. They could just cruise around to get wherever they need to go. No problem whatsoever.
Maybe the ones that they crush, the hundreds that they crush every year, they can repurpose and yeah.
Yeah, but the Providence cops wouldn't have anything to do if they weren't busting people for the ATVs at that point, right?
Right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Again, it's nothing is for free, right? It's just
And no such thing. It's somebody's paying for it, whether it's through directly through taxes, whether it's indirectly through inflation or, you know, debasement of the currency. And, you know, it's just that we're kicking the can down the road and we're creating this huge monster that we're going to have to, the Leviathan that just keeps on needing to be fed with taxpayer dollars in order just to sustain. And it's like a drug addict. They need just that much to keep normal and to keep the stuff from crumbling down. If you ever even start taking away a little bit, the whole system's just going to collapse.
All right. The important thing here is that all this is preventable. They can achieve the same goals if they just got out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. You would see that if they stopped, you know, grabbing all these taxpayer funds for all these different initiatives or this or that, that's going to target such a, you know, a smaller part of the overall community, especially here in a state like Rhode Island, right? It's one of those sound good, feel good things, but if they just stop stealing everyone's money, right, people would have more money in their pocket to be able to go and do these things, to be more independent, not to have to rely on the state, you know, to get to work. And
they know how to spend it way better than you do.
Yeah.
they're better people. They know how to do it better than you can because you're too dumb. And yeah, that's what it's telling me.
I don't know. I have a sneaky suspicion that, you know, they want to keep running the buses so they can keep messing up the roads. I'm linking everything, right? They're trying to, you know, it's the self-licking ice cream cone at the state of Rhode Island. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So is that it, guys?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. We covered a lot of ground tonight.
Yeah. Great episode. Another good one. Getting into the groove, I think. They're going to keep getting better for sure. But the important thing we want to talk about, right, is how to connect with us, right? As we kind of started off the episode here is how do we stay connected and how do we get this thing growing and advance liberty in Rhode Island? So obviously to connect with us, you can always go to libertyri.com/connect. And it's our contact form. All our social media links are there. Easiest way to get in touch with us. Another huge, huge thing is going to be to join us at libertyri.net, which is our social community, very much like you're used to on Facebook or other social communities / forums, that type of thing. You definitely join us there. Let's have a conversation, post information that you find out there that's important to you. Start a group. You can start a group for yourself and invite people in. So definitely join us at libertyri.net. And then as always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast itself. And you could find us, you should be able to find us now on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, all the major podcatchers. If you don't see us on any of them, shoot us an email or a message. And we'll take a look at the tech side of that and figure out what's going on there. But yeah, as always, everybody stay safe out there and keep fighting for liberty here in the little state of Rhode Island. And we'll be seeing you soon.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, all.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.